Will you pray with me? God, be in my head and in my understanding. God, be in my mouth and in my speaking. God, be in all our hearts and in our hearing. So I remember very clearly the first time I heard Helen Turbo preach. Now, of course, we all know that Helen is a brilliant preacher all the time. But in addition to that, that first time I realized that she was preaching from a woman's perspective, offering insights that had honestly never occurred to me as a man. Wow, I thought, I could never do that. That said, I have to admit that there's an aspect of the gospel story that I've never really been able to get my head around. And that's the person of the Virgin Mary, the mother of Jesus. And I'm very much aware that, especially in the Roman Catholic Church, there's a massive cult worshipping Mary. And to be perfectly honest, I'd always thought that that was just a way to offer a godlike figure that women could relate to. And in that image, there is a lot of focus on motherhood there, and rightly so. But that's never felt completely satisfactory to me, not deep enough, if you will. For example, I have to confess that one of my least favorite Christmas carols, and there are a few, is Once in Royal David City, where we're told that Mary was that mother mild. A typical Victorian sentimentalization. Are you kidding me? She's 9 months pregnant. She's been dragged halfway across the country to fulfill her fiancé's, not her own, obligation to the census. She ends up giving birth in a stable and having to use a feed trough for a crib. She's supposed to be mild. I mean, I know she's a saint, but that doesn't recall any woman I have ever met. So in this moment, when the role of women in our theological discourse is once again going through an extraordinary change, I'm feeling the need to take my life in my hands, even as a man, and look at Mary more closely. If I miss something, or God forbid, if I slip into mansplaining, I'm sure you'll let me know after worship. I can make a list of the people who will let me know. So, what do the Gospels tell us about Mary? Well, Mark's Gospel doesn't include a birth narrative, so Mary only gets a passing mention as watching where Jesus' body is laid after the crucifixion. John's Gospel also doesn't have a birth narrative because John emphasizes that Christ was with God long before, way back at the beginning of creation. So Mary does appear at the wedding at Cana in John's Gospel, where Jesus seems to be a little disrespectful, quite honestly, but where she obviously has some authority to give instructions to the servants. And we also meet Mary at the crucifixion, where Jesus hands responsibility for her over to the disciple whom he loved. It's a very touching scene, but honestly, I'm always reminded of the part in the old marriage service where the fathers gave their daughters to the groom as if they were a piece of property. It is Matthew and Luke who offer birth narratives, the birth of Jesus, because they feel the need to establish the bona fides of Jesus as a special sort of hero and the fulfillment of prophecy from the moment of his birth. Matthew offers the extensive genealogy going back to Abraham and the prophecies about the virgin birth and a star in the east. Matthew's focus, frankly, is on Joseph and his dreams. He doesn't tell us much about Mary. In fact, and actually, it is not this but next Sunday when the church typically celebrates Mary. But since we're in the liturgical year of Matthew, there honestly isn't much to go on. He just writes, "His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. And because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace, he had in mind to divorce her quietly." Nobody asked Mary, you note. So it is from Luke's gospel that we get proper stories about Mary. In Luke, Jesus' importance is established by the legend of the virgin birth, because tradition said that extraordinary accomplishments of heroes must mean that they are not merely human. So, for example, the legend goes that Alexander the Great was conceived when a bolt of lightning sent by the gods struck his mother's womb just before her wedding night. I can't resist, I shouldn't say this, but I couldn't help writing, "I guess the earth moved." To get even creepier, Atia, who was the mother of the Emperor Augustus, insisted that he had been fathered by the god Apollo in the form of a snake. And since Augustus was considered by a god by the Romans, as the true son of God, Jesus also had to have a miraculous birth. Now, I'm not questioning whether the virgin birth is true or not, just that such a story would have been expected for the people to take Jesus seriously. But in Luke's gospel, Mary is presented as a real, very thoughtful person in her own right at the presentation at the temple, and again when the 12-year-old Jesus is found debating with the elders in the temple, we hear of her thinking about what this all means. Now, another way for the writer to establish the magnitude of Jesus' birth is through his mother's name. And we know her as Mary, but Mary is actually the Greek translation, or comes from the Greek translation of the Hebrew name Miriam. And just as Matthew suggests the bona fides of Jesus through the genealogy, Luke connects Mary to a central figure in Jewish history. Miriam was the sister of Moses and Aaron, and was a prophetess in her own right. We can assume that she was the sister who watched over baby Moses hidden in the bulrushes, and who suggested to Pharaoh's daughter that she knew just the right wet nurse for the baby, who was Moses' own mother. Must have taken some nerve to pull that one off. Now, there are a number of different explanations of the meaning of the name Miriam. Some understand it to mean beloved, which is fairly standard. That's a nice name to have. But another interpretation is bitter, which would come from Miriam's experience of oppression in Egypt. And I learned from Laurie Martin last week that the First Nations version of the New Testament uses the name Bitter Tears as the First Nation's name for Mary, obviously alluding to the loss of her son, Jesus, but possibly alluding back to the first Miriam's bitter experience. A third understanding of the name Miriam, though, comes from her refusal to accept the murder by the ICE agents, oops, did I say that out loud, of her baby brother, Moses. The word is, wait for it, the word is rebellious, a rebellious woman. Wait, what? You mean this mild, beatific Mary might actually have been rebellious Miriam? Hot damn. See, this is why I've always struggled so much with the sanitized version of the passive Mary that things keep happening to. As a boy chorister, every second day I got to sing a different musical setting of the Magnificat, Mary's song. It's part of the Anglican evening song service. But even though I sang it so often, I never really paid attention to the words. I did actually pay attention to what came next in the service, the so-called Nunc Dimittis. Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, which I always thought that meant that I was going to get to go home soon. But back to the Magnificat. It's been set to music by just about every composer there ever was. There are thousands of settings, including the one by Lutheran Marty Hogan that the women in the choir just sang for us. Because it's assigned as a canticle, something sung in place of a psalm for today. But did you hear the words in this poem? Listen again. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but he has sent the rich away empty. I'm going to read that for you again. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. Folks, this is revolutionary stuff. Donald Trump wouldn't like it at all. And because it's at the very beginning of the gospel, this is super important. It's the first Christian manifesto, if you will, in Luke's gospel. And it comes from Miriam, Mary, not from John the Baptist, not even from Jesus himself, but from a woman, from Mary. So I wonder if an accurate image of Mary is not so much this familiar one, as this one, a strong, fist-pumping woman demanding social justice. One reason all this is so top of mind for me right now is that we are about to experience a seismic shift in our Anglican Church. Next month, for the first time ever, the world leader of our church, the Archbishop of Canterbury, will be a woman. Now, a friend said to me the other day, well, that's not such a big deal, of course. I mean, I can't believe this is still an issue. But it is. The Anglican Communion is almost certain to split over this, as a number of patriarchal bishops have already indicated that they plan to leave. It may not seem such a big deal in Canada, where we've had women in leadership for 30 years. But around the world, it's going to be huge. And honestly, from the different parishes I visit, even in this diocese, I can tell you this is going to be a struggle for some. And so as we love our brothers and sisters through this change, it will help, I think, to have our scriptural ducks in a row. Of course, the resistance to women in leadership has always arisen from the patriarchal history of the church. But I also wonder if part of the challenge for women to take their rightful place as Christian leaders is the apparent absence of such women in the biblical accounts. Pretty much none in the New Testament, and just a handful in the Hebrew Bible. But I wonder if listening to Mary Miriam's Magnificat song, that might cause us to rethink a little bit. What if we revisit Mary Miriam beyond the conventional role of nurturing mother, which is important, and understand her as the first person in the New Testament to articulate the outrageous, rebellious premises that her son will expand on during his ministry. Mary, the rebellious woman. I wonder, how does that actually make you feel?